to really be a genuine missing link, transitional form, what we would have to see would be something somewhere like an animal that had, say, a half wing, half foot. See, the foot hadn't quite completely developed into a wing. Now, that would be what we'd call a transition. But we don't ever see anything like that in the fossils. Or coming from the fish to the amphibian stage, say. You know, we say that the fish evolved into amphibians. Fine. Show me a fossil with a half fin, half foot. Okay, you see what I'm saying? Somewhere that had to be. That there would have had to have been something like that. And if we had a series of animals showing how, you know, here was a complete fin and the next one had, you know, 2% foot and 98% fin, and the next one had, you know, finally we got up to, you know, then I'd say, well, let's consider this. This is kind of hard to deal with now. At least I'd consider it. I wouldn't buy it. Because God's already said something else, don't you understand? But at least I could see where they'd been taken in. Archaeopteryx is supposed to have lived in the Jurassic period. Now, I'm not going to tell you, but you know, that doesn't mean much to most of you. You can look it up when you get home. In the Jurassic period. Now, unfortunately, in the last few years, we found a fully developed bird. Now, see, the Archaeopteryx, he's supposed to be the forerunner of all the modern birds, the ancestor of all the modern birds. Unfortunately, a couple of years ago, we found an absolutely modern bird in Jurassic beds, the same beds that we find Archaeopteryx in. Now, I hope this isn't too deep for you, too fast for you, but you see, it's kind of understood that a parent has got to be older than his child. And if the modern bird is in the same... Yeah. And if the modern bird and the so-called parent are in the exact same age rocks, then obviously Archaeopteryx is not the parent, the progenitor, the forerunner of the modern birds. What is he? He's an extinct bird that had teeth. I understand, though, and I want you to understand that I understand that superficially all that could be said to look like evolution. Now, okay, Floyd, you're inferring to me that's not what it's all about. Well, then tell me, Floyd, I've got the right to know. What do fossils mean if it doesn't mean great age and geologic ages? And how did they get in those rocks? How did they get in the rocks? And what do they mean if they don't mean what historical geology says, great ages and evolution and changes? The key then is the sedimentary rocks, because fossils are not found in igneous rocks or metamorphic rocks. Fossils are found in sedimentary rocks. And Peter says in our scriptures that the key to understanding the sedimentary rocks, you hear, you ready, is the flood, is a great worldwide catastrophe. Now, the geological column, which I've discussed with you, just where we went out and found all, you know, to many different localities, local localities, and saw the rock formations, and we decided that, you know, we would, the simplest ones ought to be, the ones that had the simplest fossils ought to be at the bottom, and we put those at the bottom, and we began to build up on the crystalline basement rock, the ancient crystalline basement rock, and we built up this geologic column from 100 miles to 200 miles, depending on which author you want to read. And the column then was interpreted, don't you understand, the geologic column as we see today, the Earth's crust today, the thickest we ever see sedimentary rocks is somewhere around 10 to 12 miles thick. It averages around the Earth about a mile thick, okay, of sedimentary rocks. So there's tons of sedimentary rocks. And Peter says the way to understand those sedimentary rocks is the world flood. If we interpret the column by uniformitarian principles of present-day sedimentation, present-day sedimentary process. In other words, you go down and see how fast the sediments are going to the ocean. Now, there are some other sedimentary processes, but the main one is weathering and erosion being deposited in the sea. There are others, though, I want you to know, you know, like volcanism and glacial deposits and even little microorganisms such as corals and are made from secreting from these little microorganisms. And also certain limestones are deposited by these organisms. Wind deposits, certain things. But the main one is rivers carrying the sediment to the sea. Now, if we measure how fast that's happening today and apply the current doctrine of uniformitarianism, that's how fast it's always done it, well, then we're going to get great eons of time. In other words, if you went to Grand Canyon today, you'd see about a mile of sedimentary rock exposed. And if we said, well, let's see, the rivers are deposit. Of course, when the river first hits the ocean, the load drops real fast. But farther on out, just a little way, we measured, you know, to see what's the overall average out there. Maybe it's a 16th or 32nd or an 18th of an inch or an eighth of an inch, something like that. So now you go to Grand Canyon, and there you are with your guide at Grand Canyon. He graduated from Penn State. That's a good geological school, LSU, and others. And he tells you, look at that mile of sedimentary rock. Let's apply uniformitarian thinking. The present is the key to the past. Present rivers, you know, we're getting a 16th of an inch a year deposited. Divide 16th of an inch into a mile. And what you're going to get, obviously, when you do that, is it will demand an immense amount of time based on uniformitarian thinking. But, beloved, God says wrong. Look at your Bible quickly. 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 8. God says, here's the real way to understand that you're looking at the Grand Canyon or any other place. And please, this verse has been taught. Everybody that wants to prove anything uses this verse any way they want to. Once in your life, at least get to hear that verse taught in context. In context, the Lord's saying, look, everyone's trying to go by uniformitarianism, and they've missed the flood and the three cosmi and the fire. The key is that they're thinking, based on uniformitarian thinking, they would have taken forever to deposit that. But don't you understand that with me, what you guys think would take 1,000 years to deposit at your uniformitarian rates, I can do in a day. That's what he really means. That is the Bible context interpretation. So you guys are thinking, hey, they were in the ark 365 days. There was 365 days of all that churning up, 40 days and 40 nights of rain, but it was still getting all churned, and the fountains of the great deep broke up, and it was getting all churned up and deposited and coming up, and volcanoes were going off, and volcanism was going on. The fountains of the deep broke up, it says. And all kind of great, fantastic mountain building was going on, and erosion and collapses and everything. All these wonderful things were going on, and God says, man, you may have thought it took 1,000 years, but I did that one in a day. There's nothing to it. Duck soup. And he said, so in other words, beloved, God's answer that no Christian should be ashamed of is the answer to uniformitarianism, and that the real way to understand the deposits, the sedimentary deposits and the fossils, is the flood and the fact that God did in a day what they thought took thousands of years. How are the oldest determined? The oldest rocks. Where do you find the geologic column, in other words? Where in nature do you find the geologic column with the oldest at the bottom? Now, let me just tell you this. The only place in the whole world you ever find the geologic column is in a textbook, in the pages of a textbook. And the way they build the column is they use four basic principles. I'll mention them very quickly. Vertical superposition. In other words, the oldest is on the bottom and you keep stacking younger's on top. And we see the local columns, you know, over here. We drill a well here, go to road cuts here, we go up to New York, we go to Paris, we go to Bangkok, we go all over the world, and we see different rocks, and they're different in thickness, and we pile them all up and say, now there's the column. If it was ever at one place at one time, that's what it would look like. We try to identify the rocks types, their lithologic identification, you know, this rock is this rock. We go by something called unconformities, which I'll mention more in a few minutes, to help us establish the geologic column. And fourthly and lastly, by fossil succession. Now, before I tell you how we do it, let me tell you how we don't do it. They're not dated by any physical feature. In other words, we do not date rocks by their physical appearance. We have what they call, we're told, are very old rocks, but they look young. They're not tightly cemented together. They're loose. They're fibrous. If you looked at them, you'd think they just got deposited last year. But they tell me they're very old. How do you know that? Well, I'll get to that in a minute. Then I see some very young rocks that look very old. They tell me they're young. You know, I mean, they look young, but they tell me they're very old. So they're not dated by their appearance. Rocks are not dated by their type. In other words, we find limestones, sandstones, shalestones, granites in all geological ages. So the fact that you've got a certain type of rock doesn't help you at all in telling how old it is. They tell us. And they're right. Because they're all the same age. Noah's flood. Now, let me hasten to add, there may have been some sedimentation during the 1656 years from Adam to Noah, because the Bible does say there were rivers going through the Garden of Eden. So you could have had some, but not much. Not compared to the flood. How do I know that? Because Peter says the flood's the key. We don't date rocks by their by the minerals and ores they contain, because rocks of all, quote, all geologic ages contain all the different kind of minerals and all the different kind of ores. In fact, most of them, even of all the different ages, even contain such things as oil and gas, most of them. They are not dated by structural features such as folds and faults and unconformities and synclines and anticlines and geosynclines and wonderful words like that, which most of you don't know anything about anyway. But we don't use that. They are not dated by their adjacent rocks, the rocks next to them. In other words, they tell us that rocks of all ages are lying on the crystalline basement, and that is true. Rocks that they consider to be of all ages are on the basement. Now, see, that kind of hurts. Let this be the basement. I'll draw a line up here, and all these X's, that represents the ancient basement, what we call the Precambrian rock. It's real fun. See, it'd be nice if you went out there and there was always this real pretty blue rock on the bottom every time you found that. That'd be sweet if that was all over the world. But you don't find that. In fact, what you really find in the real world is that they date rocks and they'll tell you this rock is a certain age, and you go over here and you find another rock type lying right on the crystalline basement, and they'll tell you that this rock is a totally different age from this, all the way where this one was deposited, you know, say 10,000 years ago, but that one was deposited 540 million years ago. So in other words, when you go to the real world, what you really find is rocks of, quote, all geologic ages lying directly against the crystalline basement. Very suspicious. We do not use vertical superposition in dating rocks. In other words, when you go out in nature, vertical superposition simply means you ought to find, if they're right, the oldest on the bottom, and then younger piled up on top. Now, when we go in nature, we don't really find it that way. We find every possible combination. So we don't use this method. We find old rocks on top of young rocks, and young rocks on top of old rocks, and almost everything you can imagine, resting conformably on top of each other. Now, this would be a good method to use for a local rock formation, or a few formations at a local place. You ought to find water would tend to deposit the older one at the bottom, and the young one on top. I wouldn't have any trouble with that if we were just talking about, a little road cut out here, a little well over here, locally. Nothing wrong with that, locally. We don't do it by radiometric dating. I already told you that, and I'll go into more detail about that later. We don't use that. All the rocks in the whole geologic column were already given a date, and that date has not been changed since we learned about radiometric dating. That alone ought to make you suspicious beyond belief of all radiometric dating. And lastly, we don't even use all the fossils. We only use a few. A special group that we call index fossils. Let me write that on the board. Index fossils. What in the world, Brother Floyd, is an index fossil? An index fossil is a fossil that's supposed to have had a very narrow vertical range of living. He didn't live very long. So that if we find him, we've got a date narrowed down real close. But he had a large horizontal extension over the earth. In other words, he lived in large places. We'll find him all over the world, pretty much, but only in a narrow time gap. He didn't live very long and became extinct. Got me? Now, that's what an index fossil is by definition. Those are the only fossils we use, and there aren't very many index fossils when you compare them to the sum total of all the fossils. Well, Floyd, I got it. You told us how we didn't do it. Now, how do we do it? Oh, well, we do it by index fossils. How do you do it by index fossils? By their stage of evolution. Wait a minute, Floyd, you haven't proved to me that evolution is true yet. Oh, they never did that to me in school. They just told me that the fossils would prove the rocks were old. How? By their stage of evolution. The simplest one will be at the bottom, and the more complex one will be at the top. Well, now, wait just a minute. Let's think about that. I mean, I hate to put fly in the buttermilk there, but yes, I can see that, that would be good for tracing local beds. You could find a fossil that was peculiar right here and drill a well here and drill a well there. That would work locally. But how about region to region and continent to continent, which is what we're really doing? I mean, how do we know that that's true? You see, if evolution were really known to be true, say by some revelation from God, or by the fact that men had lived all those years and kept writing down in books and passing those books on down to us, so we have real science. Somebody really saw it and wrote it down. Well, the method ought to work. You'd have to admit that'd be a fantastic method. What a method. It would work. It'd be foolproof. This one was simple, and he was laid down first because you were alive back there and you told me. or God told me. And then you lived later and you wrote down that the next one that was a little more complex lived after that. That'd be wonderful. But you see, the problem is the writers say again, fossils provide the only historical documentary evidence that that life on this earth has evolved from simple to more complex. Good. How do we know evolution is true? Well, the fossils prove it, they tell us. Well, how did they do that? I thank you, but you still haven't told me how. Now, remember, this is my field. Well, Floyd, here's how. Old rocks have simple fossils. Young rocks, they tell me, have complex fossils. Well, that'd be fine if I knew, number one, that evolution was a fact, or if I had some foolproof method, number two, of proving the rock was old to start with. In other words, what they're telling us is this. Let me make sure you see this. See that rock? They tell you it's old. Oh, thank you. Therefore, if I find fossil A in that rock, that's an old fossil. That's very sweet. I appreciate that so much. But you see, actually, the way they did it was, they found a rock layer, formation, and in that formation was a fossil. And if the fossil was simple, I'll draw a zero, automatically, it's old. Now, I don't care where you find that rock. You can find that rock on top of the ground. You'd think if it's old, it'd have the decency to be deeply buried. I mean, that's what you do with people when they get old. You deeply bury them. Now, what I'm trying to tell you is when you really go to nature and look at the rocks, you find these simple fossils anywhere and everywhere in the column. Anywhere. All depths. Anywhere. Sitting right on top of the basement sometimes and sitting right on top of the mountain another time. Now, how do we date those rocks? Well, by the index fossils and by their stage of evolution. If it's complex, it's got a highly developed stage of evolution, so it's a very young rock. So do you see what I'm saying and trying to show you? Arbitrarily, the proof of evolution rests on the assumption of the belief that evolution happened. It's a religion and a philosophy. Our definition is, if a rock system's got a simple fossil, it's old. But you didn't prove it to us. Oh, no. No, we never proved that. That's our statement of faith. And if the rock system has a complex fossil, it's young. Now let me tell you the truth. We got them out there that's got both of them in it. They're screaming to us that the whole fault is wrong. But we saved the baby. You say, how can you say that? Let me show you this. Let me show you a series of fossils. Here's a series of fossils. A zero with a line through it, slightly more complex. Zero with a cross through it, zero with a cross through it that goes all the way through the zero, and then we'll make a wonderful creature. A zero with a cross through it that goes all the way over, and another zero. Now there's a complexity. All right, now, you could see, and if they were in series, you know, you could tell, well, that kind of looks like, you know. Now, if you look from the bottom one to the top one, you might not be so sure they were related, but you could see they were, you know, at least it wasn't a cat and a butterfly. Here's another series of fossils. A square with a line through it, a square with a cross through it, a square with a cross through it that goes all the way through and extends beyond it. And, of course, we'll make a square with a cross that goes all the way beyond it and another square around that. Two totally different critters. Now, you can see that in the rocks, simple to complex, simple to complex, but you can't see squares becoming zeros. That's what I'm telling you. And if evolution were true, that's what ought to happen. Now, here's the other thing. When we go to the rocks and you see the basement, in other words, here's the crystalline basement. I'll draw you four examples. Here's the basement, here's the basement, here's the basement, here's the basement. I'm drawing some X's for crystalline basement. Crystalline basement. Isn't this wonderful? Crystalline basement. And now I'm going to put some rocks, some layers on top of this. And then I'm going to stick some of these fossils I've drawn for you in there, and we'll interpret geologically. This is exactly how we do it. It's really brilliant. Now, this one, we'll put a circle right on the first one. Aha! A rock with a simple fossil line right on the basement. Very ancient. Obviously Cambrian. Hallelujah. And we get so excited. Well, we'll go over here about a mile away, and here it is. And son of a gun, here we've got the circle with the cross that goes all the way through it, lying right on the basement. Oh, that doesn't bother us at all. We just say, well, the older beds were never deposited here. It was too high. This part was sticking up, now in today, you understand. When we look at it, it isn't sticking up high. But in the past, see, I'm showing you how to think geologically. You got to save the baby. In the past, this was sticking up high when these beds over here were being deposited. So nothing got deposited there. Or we can save it another way. It did get deposited, but then it got stuck up high and got eroded off. The lower rocks, the older rocks, were eroded off. Those are two of our techniques. Now, we've got others. Our mind is fertile with imagination. We have faults, unconformities. We got all kinds of things we use. What I'm trying to tell you is there is nothing that can be found in nature that the evolutionary model cannot accommodate by a secondary assumption, nor is there anything that can be found in nature that the creation model cannot accept by a secondary assumption. You cannot prove either model scientifically, even though they're totally diametrically opposed to each other. Over here, for example, here's a formation lying above the crystalline basement. Oh, we'll really juice this one up. Oh, let's put the top one, you know, the really compact one. Here's a square with a X through it that extends out and square around the square. Now what we have, according to the evolutionist, is a very young rock lying right on the basement. But, oh great zot and stars above, several layers above this, we've got a simple square, and in the same formation with a simple square, we've got a square with a cross through it that sticks out on each side. Now how can this be? How old is that one? How are we going to do it? Well, we'll figure out a way to get that one over here. We'll put a fault in there or something. I mean, there's nothing you can find that we can't explain. Well, you say, well, wait a minute, Floyd. No human being can explain how a very simple one in the same family, you know what I mean, in the same line of trilobites, is in the same horizontal bed with a trilobite that's much, much more complex. How do you do that? Easy. Are you ready for this one? Well, what we say is this. Originally, there was an old ancient highland, and here's the ocean out here. And this is the ancient old rock with a very simple square fossil in it. And down here, the rivers are bringing modern sediment and depositing it right here. And we're getting some beds building up here at the ocean. And here, it's modern. So, a little modern creature that looks like the square with the X through it that goes all the way through. He gets deposited right there. He's modern. And son of a gun, would you believe it? Right up here in that highland on these ancient old rocks, one of those old square fossils, very simple, got eroded out. And carried by the river and deposited at the same time that one of the more modern fossils was. And we call him a ghost. See, we call him a ghost. In other words, he's already dead and he shows up a lot, you know, that looks like he lived later or earlier, as the case would be, earlier. So you see, what I'm trying to tell you is, our minds are made up. Nothing we find will shake us. We will come up with a drawing, some way to work. Jay, we are not going to come to the flood. Because that's what God says, and everybody knows we know more than God. Now, I've tried to give you some illustrations to show you, hear me, that in reality, fossils of different complexity and so-called ages are mixed, that there is no order in nature. So that really, when they tell you old and young beds, all they're really doing is telling you that it had a simple fossil. Now, if evolution were true, that would be true. That would be a foolproof method, wouldn't it? It would be. You find a simple fossil, it's an old bed. But that's the fly in the buttermilk. We don't know that it's true. In fact, remember, the key is that fossils are found in sedimentary rocks. Rocks that, for the most part, have been deposited in the ocean by the rivers. When we study the hydraulic sedimentary processes that are happening in nature, they tell us, hear this, that not one single rock of the entire geologic column could possibly have been formed by present processes of uniformitarianism and present rates. And that's what science is. Science is what we can see. When we go by what we see happening, not one single sedimentary rock can be explained, nor one single fossil. I want you to know that all the early geologists believed in the flood. All the founding geologists believed in the flood, a worldwide flood. Now, the story of the worldwide flood has never been disproved in science. We didn't disprove it. We rejected it and laughed it into ridicule. No one's ever disproved the flood scientifically. We just rejected it. And that's exactly what Peter said they would do. All the rock forming and fossil forming processes that we see in nature scream no to uniformity and scream catastrophe. Let me explain it to you. The fact, this is science now, the fact that all beds contain some kind of fossil, all beds that are sedimentary all over the world contain some kind of fossil, screams catastrophe. That every bed that was laid down rapidly under a catastrophe. Because, beloved, you can't make a fossil unless you have rapid, instant burial. In fact, listen, about 20 years ago, we did some experiments. I remember at the time, we let some fish die. And we killed these fish and exposed them, like, different periods of time to air before we buried them to see what would happen to them. And, I mean, it got down to, like, less than a minute. If that fish died and got oxygen on it, dead, and it can get oxygen right out of water, less than a minute even, and we buried it, it didn't make a fossil. Within days, it rotted. I mean, we buried it deep. In other words, there's only one way you can make a fossil. You must have burial concomitant with death. Maybe even they get buried alive, or at least they get buried so quickly after dying, or else you don't get a fossil. In other words, it's hard to get to be a fossil. You got to really make a concentrated effort. The very fact that every sedimentary bed has some kind of fossil in it, everywhere in the world, is proof that every bed in the world was deposited rapidly, just as God says in the Bible. For instance, we find in Wyoming, in Belgium, in Africa, huge deposits of dinosaurian bones that look like log jams. Just bones turned, twisted, contorted. Hundreds and thousands of them. Obviously the result of a local catastrophe. Layers going right through, you know, the bones sticking here like this, and the layers transgressing and cutting diagonally across the bones. Obviously a catastrophe, buried rapidly. We find in California fossil herrings, listen, over a billion fossil herrings fossilized in 4 square miles. How did that happen? A catastrophe. Now let me tell you what I mean. See, when fishies die, they don't just sift to the bottom and gradually a little silt build up on the sides of that fish, gradually, month after month, and you know, and finally he's entombed. Well, if that happens, he's not going to make a fossil. See, what happens in the real world is when fish die and go to the bottom, or you know, they begin to decompose, then they bloat and float. If they ever get time enough to bloat and float. Usually when they go to the bottom, some little shrimp, some scavenger gets him, eats the meat, oxygen in the water begins to act on the bones, and very soon you got nothing. Now see, they'll tell you, oh, it's easy to get that to happen. We have red tides. They talk about the red tide out in California. It killed millions of fish. Yeah, it sure did, but you didn't get a single fossil out of them. See, what happened was the red tide was a bunch of microorganisms that began to reproduce very rapidly and choked out the oxygen in the water and all the fish died. Millions of fish died, but you didn't get a single fossil. You know why? They didn't get buried immediately. In other words, by present things we have seen, nobody can account for a billion fossil herrings in 4 square miles. No one that's ever lived has ever seen anything happen like that in science. It's what we see. So something happened to those fossil herrings like no man has ever seen. Something happened to those dinosaurs where they were packed in there like log jams in Belgium, in Africa, in Wyoming. I'm talking about all over the world. Like no man has ever seen. In other words, they've got to be buried before air and bacteria can get to them. Now, that sounds pretty bad for the evolutionists, doesn't it? See, I was a paleontologist. I know about this. I know exactly how to make a fossil, and so do they. And they are chagrined. Hey, now you'd think they'd all repent right there, wouldn't you? Right? Some of you in here may even be geologists, students. You'd think right there you'd repent. But necessity is the mother of invention. Rather than repent and come to God and His revelation about the worldwide flood, they make a secondary assumption to save their model. It's brilliant. They say, well, the problem is, we admit, and they do today, the best geologists all over the world today, especially the young ones, are beginning to admit what I just told you. That every single sedimentary rock had to be formed rapidly, had to be deposited rapidly because they all contain fossils. And there's no way that they could have been formed slowly and preserve those fossils. But they won't believe it was one catastrophe. They say there were millions of little bitty local catastrophes. What is their wonderful secondary assumption that saves the baby? How are they see? Listen to me. If every formation was formed very rapidly, then why not a worldwide flood? That's what it screams. That's what the rocks are screaming. That's what every fossil screams. In other words, evolution, the fossils say no. But they told us to go look at the fossils. They said if we just look at the fossils, that'd prove evolution. Well, I'm trying to talk to you about fossils tonight and show you that doesn't prove evolution at all. They have unconformities. I told you I'd tell you what an unconformity was. Unconformity, it means it doesn't conform. It's a plane, and Lyell believed in these, a plane that didn't conform. In other words, right here, I'll draw it wiggly. That's the way we do it in science. We make them wiggles. Right here are a bunch of beds. Now, beds deposited in the ocean are always deposited relatively horizontal. They just won't, if you get too steep a tilt, the sediment just doesn't deposit. It just keeps falling on down the hill farther and farther until it gets about flat. Now, we've made studies on that, and that one just happens to be true. Now, here's an old ancient erosional surface. That's what an unconformity is. It's a place where the rocks don't conform. These are laid down horizontally above that erosional surface, and underneath, they're tilted, let's say, like this. So these beds are tilted to these other beds. But watch this. Somewhere out here, these tilted beds, you know, tilted beds just don't stay tilted forever. they got a dirty way of doing. You know, they start doing things like this and swinging on out in this direction. And pretty soon these beds begin to sag on out, kind of like this, when you get on out here far enough. And here's this old erosional surface. Now, for those of you that may be listening to the tape, or those of you that are here, this is what we call an onlap. So these old beds out here begin to lap on to the unconformity. And finally, you get on out here. Now, if you drilled a well here at station A, where the unconformity was, you'd start off in horizontal rocks, and then all of a sudden you'd start drilling into rocks that were tilted, say, at 45 degrees there. So something's screwy there, right? You know something's weird. How'd that happen? Well, what we would say is these beds were deposited, then we had uplift over here so that it tilted all these beds up like this, and then it tilted up so much that this got eroded off. But these down on here on the same age horizons were buried so deeply, they never got tilted, they never got eroded off. That's fine, I love that, thank you. But if I drilled out here at station B, eventually the unconformity graded, it disappeared. In other words, you finally got to a place that was never uplifted and eroded. No erosion. So that if you look down on this from a map in all four directions, here's what you might see. Here's the old part that's been eroded, the old erosional surface here, and if you were conjuring a map, your contours would smoothly come around here, of this, or one of the ages of rocks. But none of this rock here is present in here. It got eroded off. It got what we call beveled or truncated. It went bye-bye. How's that for science? It went bye-bye. When I was in school, I'm 44 years old, all right? When I was at the University of Missouri and several other universities, we were taught, because Lyell believed it, and he told everybody, and he convinced everybody back in the 1800s, that the theory of unconformities would explain the fact that all the beds were obviously deposited fast. You see, he says this. Yes. We admit that all these beds were deposited rapidly. They have fossils. Oh, yes, we admit the ones above the unconformity were deposited very rapidly. They have fossils. But who knows how long the erosion took place? Oh, there's a gap here. There's a tremendous time gap here where we have this unconformity. Who can tell us? Maybe it was a year. Maybe it was an hour. Maybe it was 100 million years. Maybe it was 10 million years. Maybe it was a billion years. And so now we have a time gap. Oh, yes, we don't mind all the beds being deposited fast, but we have this enormous time gap. We call it a hiatus. The word hiatus, that's to impress people that don't know geology. It means something's missing. And so when I was in school, what Lyell and all the greats taught us was that there were worldwide mountain-building revolutions that terminated each geological age, and that the new geologic age would begin right after that. And that along with these worldwide mountain-building revolutions that just suddenly, you know, no one ever knew why, they just happened. We called it diastrophism. That's good, isn't it? Diastrophism. And that accompanying the worldwide mountain-building were, hear this, worldwide unconformities. I was taught that. Well, I was a young boy. I never had been all over the world. And the textbook said it. And everybody knows textbooks don't lie. So I believed that, like everybody else did. And if you didn't, you better tell them you did. Or you just wouldn't graduate. But you see, we've come to find out in the last few years that there is no such thing as a worldwide unconformity. See, that'd work. If there was a worldwide unconformity, a worldwide gap, well, the evolutionist, he's got his time. He needs time for evolution to work, and he sees the sedimentary rocks were all deposited quickly. And so the only way he can now get some time is he's got to say all the time happened right in the gap. Now, that's the weirdest thing I've ever heard of in science. Do you realize what they just said? Their evidence is based on the absence of data. I know that just breaks me up, and I fell for that hook, line, and sinker. You see, but that's what they've always done. What was the evidence of evolution? The fossils. Well, where are the transitions? They're missing. So to save that, what they said is this. Well, the problem is evolution happens so slow. See, they say, go out in nature and you can see it. So I go and I can't see it. Dogs are dogs. They say, well, that's because it's happening too slowly for you to see. You got to live millions of years to see it. Isn't that wonderful? Now their evidence is based on something I can't see. Now, many of the young ones, see, that old school's running into trouble. So some of the young geophysicists, some of the young geologists, some of the young paleontologists says, aha, that ain't the way it happened. See, because they got to change the baby. If it happens slowly, they know we ought to see the transitional elements, transitional fossils, and they know we don't have them. So they're coming up with a new thought. We've got it, Brother Floyd. We used to think evolution happened so slowly you couldn't see it. Now the new thought is it happened so fast you couldn't see it. Stop. What was that? Well, what happened? The way evolution really happened is you got a small little isolated group of individuals protected by some kind of barrier in a valley or a mountain range protects us or a lagoon protects us away from anybody else getting in here and breeding with us so that we can get a mutant going in this thing and it'll really spread throughout the population fast and we'll get rapid evolution so fast that it didn't get buried in the rocks. Wonderful. Again, their great evidence for evolution comes out to be the absence of the evidence. And I would say that's a strange situation in science. It would seem to me that actual fossils in a transitional series would be a lot better evidence than their absence. But those gaps aren't embarrassing to me. I expected the gaps to be there. Now, but let's come to the unconformity. See, all of geology, now you hear this, all of historical geology, all of the great ages hinges on one great doctrine. See, they ran in trouble with the fossils because the fossils had to be deposited rapidly. Now, they won't tell you that, but they know it. So all of historical geology now hinges on the unconformities. Because that's where all the missing time is. Oh, blessed unconformity. How long art thou? But remember, it only works if you've got worldwide unconformity. See, if you had a gap missing all over the world, well, I got to admit that I can't prove anything. I can't prove that wasn't a day. I can't prove it wasn't a million years. I can't prove it wasn't 100 million years. Something's missing. But, beloved, in the last few years, we have learned that what I was taught about worldwide mountain building revolutions, worldwide unconformity, isn't true. And what's happened is, men have begun to trace with more oil wells being driven, more road cuts being made where you can see the rocks, that if you pick up an unconformity and you begin to trace it laterally, and you continue to trace it, and continue to trace, in other words, what we learned about unconformities was overestimated and overstated. If you continue to trace it far enough laterally to the side, you'll find where the unconformity ends. They all end somewhere in all directions. Now, let's see if you can follow that. If all formations from the top of the geologic column to the bottom of the column can be traced somewhere in the world without crossing a single time gap. Now, you might have to zigzag some places. But if there's no worldwide unconformity, then somewhere in the world you can find continuous deposition with no unconformities, no time gaps, everywhere throughout the entire geologic column. You draw the column. Now let me tell you, do you understand the truth? The whole geologic column, you know, 100 miles, 200 miles, it never existed. It never existed. It just, all we've got is what was deposited from the flood here and from the flood here, and we said you got to stick them on top of each other. That never happened that way in reality. You're looking at what happened when you go and see your local little deposits. Oh, they've been altered somewhat in the last 5,000 years by erosion. And I hope you're understanding that with the great flood came glaciation. See, when God talks about a flood, who cares whether it was a frozen flood or a watery flood? When the rain began to fall from the sky, the earth, as you know, has magnetic poles, the north magnetic pole, south magnetic pole, and magnetic lines of flux pass through these poles. And as some of the water began to fall, for one reason or another, it froze. Who knows, you know, I mean, wind, updrafts, who cares? God didn't tell us how he did that, so you know. But the point is, and well, there's a lot of ways. With the fountains of the deep breaking up, great volcanism going on, huge explosions, carbon dioxide going up in there, huge storms. We've never had storms. Huge winds and torrents and everything could create incredible chill factors. And we know that there were incredible chill factors. We found frozen animals all over the world with tropical plants in their mouth and in their stomach, frozen solid. As snow would form, snow has positive and negative charges, it would tend, in such a worldwide cataclysm, it would be up so at great altitudes. In other words, remember, the rain is coming from above our atmosphere. That layer was above the firmament, way up yonder. It would all tend to fall right along the magnetic lines of flux. And you'd tend to find great glaciation. Incidentally, let me make sure you understand this. And so we would tend to find great accumulations of a frozen flood. You understand, a glacier is just a slow-moving, solid river. Okay, it's just a river, it flows slow because it's solid instead of liquid. Now what? Then even if we had gave them their geologic column, all stacked up, since we can trace zigzag back and forth and find where those unconformities end, then somewhere all the time, all around the world, there's always been continuous deposition. And we know that deposition was very fast. So what we had was, during the flood, great volcanism, and beds would be laid down, and suddenly, up comes this big volcanism, this big maybe gas bubble explosion or whatever, and up would come this. It would get immediately beveled off these rocks with, and boom, down it goes, and here it gets buried again. For a whole year, we've got yo-yos going on. Therefore, the fossils are getting all messed up. Some, you know, there weren't any ghosts, just they're all about the same age, a year. No real worldwide time gap actually exists in nature. Therefore, each formation of the geologic column was laid down rapidly by a catastrophe. And the fossils and the unconformities have been misinterpreted and misunderstood. Therefore, the geologic column represents continuous deposition around the world somewhere, and it happened rapidly. And therefore, beloved, if each unit is formed rapidly with no time gap existing between the units worldwide. Now locally, yes, there's some time gaps locally. But if you go far enough, there's no time gap. Then the whole is equal to the sum of its parts. Did you hear that? Then the whole is equal to the sum of its parts. And therefore, beloved, the whole entire geologic column was formed rapidly, catastrophically by a flood. And the only worldwide cataclysm that anyone ever heard about was the flood of Noah, that God says we're deliberately, willfully ignorant about. God says the evidence is there and that man rejects it and will not really go out and take a good look at what's happening. And so, beloved, as 1 Timothy 6 said, this is not true science. The evidence has all been misinterpreted. Therefore, beloved, quit feeling intimidated by science that is falsely so-called.